everyone, and welcome to the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners Board Briefing. Audience members, I want to start by asking you to please silence your electronic devices. For those presenting today, please turn your mic on when you begin speaking so the green light is showing, and off when you've completed your remarks so that the red light is showing. For all presenters, please state your name for the record before speaking or responding to questions. So for our first board briefing today, we are going to have a report out from the Central CBAC on the CBAC improvement letter. Last year, I directed the Office of Community Involvement to launch a CBAC improvement effort. That multifaceted effort began with listening and learning sessions and focus groups to identify pressing issues, concerns, and recommendations for change. Code changes were presented and adopted this past February, and OIC, the Office of Community Involvement, has been designing and implementing a wide range of programmatic and system changes over the last few months. Part of this effort included inviting the Central CBAC to focus their time and attention this budget cycle to helping the county better understand and respond to the problems that came out of the inquiry phase from a participant perspective. This year, Central CBAC members reviewed past work, received presentations from several offices on CBAC-related issues, as well as conducted and analyzed their own participant survey. I am so grateful. We are all grateful for their insights, for their time, for their input, and we very much look forward to hearing from the co-chairs today on recommendations from the committee for continued change. I appreciate all the thoughtful work that has gone into this engagement and look forward to ways that will help Multnomah County keep improving this budget process for everyone involved. CBAC members, excuse me, I just lost my place. CBAC members, community members, this board, the broader community, all folks who are represented in our budget process. We see the CBAC improvement efforts as ongoing work as we implement, evaluate, and refine changes to improve compliance, efficiency, and participant satisfaction. The Central CBAC is here with us today to report on their work and engage the board in discussions about the next steps, so I invite them to come on down and really appreciate their time and being with us this morning. Good morning.
Great.
Morning.
Oh,
yeah. Speak softer, less mic. Well, thank you, everyone, for having us today. Previously, we were here in May because of code requirements. My name is TJ Anderson. I'm one of the Central CBAC co-chairs. What we have here is our recommendations and findings. What we have now is a more robust set of recommendations. We did have some issues with going into the depth that we wish on the most detailed problems. So what we have before you is the greatest recommendations that we found in the time. Based on analysis of current practices and feedback from CBAC members, several key findings have emerged. These findings point to systemic gaps in recruitment, onboarding, training, integration. The following outlines the findings, offers recommendations, and overall enhances the impact of the CBACs. Slide, please. That's everyone. I'm TJ Anderson, Daniel DeMello to my right. Let's see here. And everyone else that kind of helped us go through this. Slide, please. These are the big findings. CBACs are inequitably and at times inadequately supported due to absence of clear and consistent recruitment, retention, and the overall appointment process. More dedicated time is needed for onboarding, training, and understanding priorities and budgets at times. We've had role and impact be unclear to many that were on CBACs. Time commitment required for members has been a barrier for broader participation, limiting the diversity of perspectives, and CBAC membership may not fully reflect the diversity of the population served by those departments. Slide, please. So some of the recommendations that we found. One is to develop a policies and procedures guide. With that, we would strongly support continued development. We recommend the guide also include things like a time frame for member appointments. We would appreciate, and we would find that the greatest effectiveness would be with members that are new, largely appointed through July and October. A process for filling vacant CBAC seats. Ideally, we would hope within 30 days. That way, there isn't a long period of people having to read to catch up. Sorry, I lost my spot for a moment. Include a description of the role of CBAC member so they can link it to the IAP2 spectrum of engagement, just so they're clear on, hey, this is what we need to do and how we need to do it, and the effectiveness of what level it is. Slide, please. So we believe that the guide for CBAC members should include as well outline of onboarding activities, descriptions, clear language, basically everything that someone who is new would be able to effectively do their job, however they come in, at what time, and as long as they can catch up with the reading or with any reports, they should be able to do so adequately. This includes guidelines for disclosure of conflicts of interest, guidelines for ambiguity about vacancies and quorum requirements. Next one, please. Slide, please. And this goes into our next recommendation, which is to increase our resources for recruitment and retention. Basically, we want this to strengthen partnerships, to broaden our outreach, working with neighborhood associations, town halls, budget meetings, county commissioners, like y'all here. We appreciate that. Also, culturally specific organizations who may feel that maybe they're not being heard so well on the CBACs. Slide, please. So with that, I'm sorry, I had a moment. Train went around the bend. Once we get people involved, we need to give them the tools and the templates needed so that they can actively be able to participate and feel that they're getting stuff done. This includes developing templates and guidelines for department presentations to provide standardized formats. This is for committee reports and recommendation presentations as well. And just things like timelines and visual aids to illustrate the progression of a 3-year CBAC term. And this is including learning curves of relationship building and just the growing capacity to make these informed recommendations over time. Slide, please.
All right, so with that, we also had some recommendations around the code updates. Now, I do wanna kind of level here that none of us are attorneys or have any legal training whatsoever. So please look at the general gist of some of these code changes. If there's something that wouldn't make sense legally, that's something to ask the lawyers about. But overall, we think that there are a few places that code can be updated to provide more clarity. And really, I think somewhat ironically, to empower the board more, to have more ability to discreetly influence CBACs. I can get the next slide. So the first set of updates is around just some clarity, which really is just making sure, for example, that we are not creating a separate class of CBAC participants versus CBAC members. That's your statutory interpretation rule there. 3301 here, we're suggesting that we make these few kind of changes. I would also note 3302 here, we're suggesting that this kind of line that we couldn't figure out what it meant be removed. These are pretty minor changes. Overall, we just want to make sure that the CBACs have that clear language that distinguishes them. Can I get the next slide? The second one is not a code update, but actually just an ask from the board. It could be done as just your consent item, which is that the code updates in February empowered the board to merge CBACs. However, for years, there has been a combined DCA and DCM CBAC. Now, you just gave yourselves the authority to merge CBACs, but the CBAC has been merged for many years. I could not find the board action that merged these CBACs. I'm assuming if you needed to give yourself that power, then you previously did not have that power. And so we're asking you to just formally merge those two CBACs, because right now in code, it looks like there should be separate DCA and DCM CBACs. Additionally, the CBAC code for the library CBAC, which is in chapter 19, specifies that the entire library advisory board is the CBAC for the library, but in practice, for many years, a subcommittee of that committee has been serving as the CBAC. And so we're suggesting that you update the code there to allow the board to appoint a different standing advisory body to serve as a CBAC. This was also something that was looked at for the Homeless Services Department CBAC. We couldn't figure out how the board could appoint an existing standing advisory body to serve as a CBAC, so we want to make that minor suggestion here to empower the board to allow other advisory committees to serve as a CBAC. Can I get the next slide? Thank you. This is probably the most important aspect of this, which is that we need a few bits of clarity around membership requirements. So that the first one there on 3302 is that we're suggesting that the minimum number of members for a CBAC be reduced from 7 to 2. And the reason for that is that we could not figure out whether that 7-member minimum would prevent CBACs from meeting while they don't have that minimum. And that's important because 60% of the CBAC reports that you received this year were from a committee with less than 7 members. Now, the minimum of 2 is important because there is a way by which if a CBAC gets reduced to 1 person, that 1 person still has the authority of the full CBAC but doesn't have to follow public meeting laws. So we're suggesting a minimum of 2 because that's silly. It's something that I myself have experienced. Additionally, we think that the maximum should be raised to 11 to help prevent a tie and allow for kind of greater diversity. The second recommendation here is around allowing the board to make appointments for terms that are less than 3 years. This is really important because right now the board can only make appointments for 3 years. And as a result, if you appoint someone in February, as you did with about more than 50% of the people presently serving on CBACs, if you appoint someone in February, their term will expire in February in 3 years. And obviously you don't want people's terms expiring right at that really crucial point in the budget cycle. So this recommendation is just to allow the board to appoint people for less than 3 years. It's pretty simple. Can I get the next slide? This one I think is also really important. We think that there needs to be these few changes around some of the deadlines. So these first kind of items around the date identified for the budget office, we this year had this in code. I asked the budget office if they had identified a date. They had not. It was my understanding that the budget office does not want to be in charge of identifying that date. In the same vein, there isn't really much clarity around whether the central CBAC has to follow the rules that code establishes for the other CBACs. Minor things like conflict of interest. And so we'd like there to be an item in code that just says, look, the central CBAC is a CBAC like the others. We have to follow the same rules. Can I get the next slide? This recommendation is just to make sure that some information about how CBACs are being governed is made public. So the first recommendation is to require that if someone is removed from a CBAC by the OCI director and the chief diversity and equity officer designee, that that removal be established in the public record somehow. Presently, there isn't a way to determine if someone has been removed by that process. I had to file a records request to determine whether anyone had ever been removed by that process. So this is just asking that the board confirm those recommendations. Additionally, 3302C here around terms. Right now, 2 consecutive terms, it's unclear whether that means that people need to be appointed like the immediate day after their term ends. And so by removing the word consecutive here, I think we're getting a little bit closer to what the board wanted, which is that you can't serve that many terms in the same time. And then additionally, 3302C, again here on the end, is just we think that it probably doesn't make sense to allow people to serve on more than 1 CBAC at the same time. I could only find 1 instance of this happening in the last 6-7 years, but I do think it kind of is against some of our understanding of what the CBACs are supposed to do in terms of representing the community. And then finally, the last one, can I get the next slide? We think there needs to be a small update to some of the conflict of interest code, which is just that we think that the code probably needs to explicitly ask people to recuse themselves from discussions of votes in which they have a potential or real conflict of interest. Now, some of this is going to be covered by, obviously, our status as public officials, but getting this explicitly in code will allow us to have some clarity around that, because we did have a kind of a back and forth around that. Can I get the next slide? So really, in conclusion, the CBACs need more support. That's what we heard from the recommendations that TJ supported or shared, is that CBACs need more support. CBACs need more resources and tools to help with recruitment and retention, and especially that efficient CBAC functioning. Board action is needed to update the status of two of the CBACs. That is something that can be done quickly and easily. I'm happy to share language with you if needed. And then additionally, that there are a few places in code where we need some more clarity, that we need some help with making sure that CBACs are fully staffed, and that will empower the board to make sure that appointments happen at the right times for the right length of time. Additionally, I just want to note that the CBAC improvement process that OCI has been engaging in, and the outcomes of that, is not something that our committee has had the chance to review or be involved in very much. I do want to note for the record that it has been 62 days since I presented evidence to this board and OCI that more than 60% of the CBACs have an unlawful amount of members, less than 7 members, and that more than 10% of people presently serving on CBACs are serving unlawfully. It's been also 42 days since I asked OCI to confirm who is actually a member of the Central CBAC. Now, I hear time and time again concerns from the people in my community about democracy and the rule of law. I think that begins at home. If we can't answer this basic question of who is on the Central CBAC, how can we answer the harder questions of addiction and homelessness and healthcare? I think it's really a minor ask, and it's pretty much the requirement of MCC 3306F that OCI confirm who is a member on our CBAC. I was forced eventually to ask the Oregon Government and Ethics Commission for an advisory opinion, which is forthcoming. I'd like to ask the board to act quickly to fill the CBACs as legally required, to read the forthcoming Government and Ethics Commission advisory opinion. And just want to say, I've been on this for 3 years, and I have not really seen very much substantive change, and it doesn't encourage me to continue to participate. So please read our recommendations carefully. Please read Multnomah County Code around CBACs carefully, and please act quickly to ensure that democracy and the rule of law happens in these basic advisory committees. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate all of the time and effort that you went that you put into this, and I think these recommendations are great. So I will open it up to the board for any questions or comments on this. I will say that if there are specific questions that you have around the report for Daniel, TJ, ask them. We also have Amada here from OCI. If you had questions about what's being done, you know that that she might be able to answer better. So with that, I will turn it over to Commissioner Moyer to start us off.
Yeah, first, thank you for all of your work on this and your continued volunteering for the county. One of the questions I had, and I appreciate all the work that's gone into this, on the timing of appointments and then how that lines up with our budget process, in addition to I'm not sure the level of information CBAC members feel that they're getting from departments, and then how much time we get from your experience, do you feel like CBAC members feel like they are given enough information to give valuable feedback to the commission? And then do you think the commission is receptive to that information? I'm just trying to, like, I assume, well, I'm not assuming, the point of this is obviously to improve this process. I'm kind of looking for, like, a global, where are we at and how do people feel about it?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, from the experience of doing this survey for the members of the Central CBAC, there was definitely an understanding that there's a really wide range of experience on the CBACs. I think some of the CBACs feel very well supported. Some of them do not. I think generally it probably correlates with the size of the budget of that department. So if you look at the reports from the Homeless Services CBAC for the last couple of years, there's definitely some notes around a lack of information. I would note that I've been serving on the Homeless Services Department CBAC 3 years, and I don't know how many shelter beds we have, and I don't know how many additional shelter beds are being created as a result of the budget this year, or how many are being removed. It's, for some reason, an open question. So I think that there could be more information. I think some people feel like they've also gotten too much. It probably wouldn't make sense to say generally across all the CBACs they need more information. I think what would really be helpful is a process by which CBACs can raise questions and get them answered regularly. So on the Homeless Services Department CBAC for the last couple of years, we've created a spreadsheet of our questions and didn't really get them answered. So like having a regular process by which those questions are answered, and then you have a log, right? You have this document that can exist year over year, would be really helpful. And then around the appointment terms, coming in between July and October and having that time before the budget is presented to say, like, look, these are the parts of departments, these are like the basics, is really, really helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you. I do have a question for the director, just to understand. One, thank you. I know you and I had a chance to check in about just some common themes that I saw in all the CBAC budget letters as well. So it sounds like you all kind of took that because the recommendations seem really in line with what I was reading in those letters. But just kind of the what's next and how do you plan to work on some of these recommendations?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Amada Perez, Director of OCI. So I just wanted to add that before answering your question, Commissioner Singleton, we did a survey with CBAC participants across all 10 CBACs, and 86% of those who participated did feel well-informed about departmental budgets, and that survey will be open through the rest of this month, so we're interested in learning across all of our CBACs. In terms of what's coming next, we, you know, as you know, we've done a lot of work designing and planning and listening to what the issues are and problem solving within OCI, with CBAC coordinators, with support from you all and other folks who do advisory committee work. We are launching our recruitment effort this month. We have a very robust, multifaceted approach to recruiting. We're committed to helping to fill vacancies that exist across the CBACs, and that is our priority this month. We also have a much more robust onboarding and orientation plan that I think will help to also make folks feel more comfortable about starting their leadership on a departmental CBAC, from what was goes into a two-hour workshop to now 3 2-hour workshops that break down sort of about the CBAC, community building, County 101, and then Budget 101. So we are inviting, of course, new members. We see that as a requirement, but we also want to invite existing and current members who might benefit from a refresher or just a chance to connect with folks across the CBACs. We will be doing appointments 3 times a year. We're really interested in seeing what that would look like. If we're going to be doing recruitment all year round so that we do not have vacancies, we're going to have to appoint more often than once a year, and we're going to have to do onboarding and orientation throughout the year. So we've identified three places that we think make sense to do that, and we're working on developing a sort of graphic and a little bit of an orientation that says, so you're joining in October, here's where you are in this sort of timeline. You're joining in January, here's where you are in the timeline, sort of what to look for, what to understand happened before you, and even appointing in May, which may sound like, how could you appoint at the end? We actually think that's a really good opportunity to see the outcome. So much of what we hear is that it's mysterious. What is the work of the CBAC? So we think bringing folks on at that point demystifies what the work is, can actually be a really interesting way to start. So we think, again, moving all of the programmatic pieces to year-round work and launching each of those pieces this fall is going to be significant to those changes. We are going to be finalizing a policy and procedure guidebook and have been waiting to hear the recommendations from the central CBAC, but have already started working on a draft of that. So I think those are some of the big pieces that we're implementing. We're moving beyond the design phase and now really getting to implementing and hopefully evaluating at the end of the year in an ongoing ways.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And I think one thing that when I first read this letter, I thought, oh, each department needs to do a something. And I appreciate that it's like, we're gonna do a centralized one. I do think it still makes sense for the departments to have some sort of onboarding binder for some of the specific components of theirs. So I hope that's a part of the mix, because it's a lot of work up front, but once it's together, it's easy to update. We talked about demographics, so I'm not gonna go into that here. I think for my colleagues to be aware, I think it's been a little confusing for folks when I've been asking these questions, and I just want to, I'm never asking for an individual person's identifying information, but I would love for when we're getting CBAC appointments that we get a picture of the whole CBAC, not just the new appointees. What is the demographics of that, so we understand, are these new folks filling gaps? Are there still gaps that we see and that we might want to encourage recruitment on? So I look forward to seeing that as these move forward as well. I think the one thing for you both, thank you for your service. You both were here during the budget process as well, so you spent a lot of time here, and we appreciate your volunteer time and your work. You made a recommendation in number three around membership that was about moving it to two members. I think this was in one of the code changes. And I understand we're trying to solve for the problem of the code requirements around membership. How did you land on two people?
So a few years ago, I found myself as the only member of the Central CBAC. And after looking into state law around governing bodies and public bodies, it became clear that as the only member of the governing body of the public body, which is the Central CBAC, I could act as if I have the power of the full committee, which I did because I was the only member, and didn't need to hold public meetings to have a vote, because the public meeting requirements only kick in when you have two or more members. And so we, I think, initially thought that having the minimum was bad overall because of this question around, can the board accept a report from a CBAC who has less than seven members? Right now, code really does explicitly say that CBACs have to have a minimum of seven members. As a result, if they don't have seven members, what happens? It's unclear. The board accepted those reports this year. I don't think maybe you should have. And so I think it also, you know, raises this question of quorum and whatnot, right? So I think we wanted to have there be no minimum, but then running into this question of like, well, we don't want people to be able to act as if they're the whole CBAC if they're the last remaining member. That's why we established the two-member minimum rather than having no minimum at all.
Thank you. I'll definitely look forward to kind of going through some of the proposed code changes and how they might impact. There's some, I will just say, having been, while I was at the state, having to remove somebody, a couple of different people from advisory committees, I struggle with that coming to a public domain, because oftentimes the issues were not something that person wanted to be public. So I just want to put that out there, that that one in particular, I think we need to talk a lot more about. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Brim Edwards.
Thanks for the presentation and the work and the thoughtfulness behind it. I feel like this, since my first day on the commission, I'm sort of struggling with how we really support community members providing what I feel like really valuable information and into and informing our budget process. So thank you for the thoughtful recommendations. And since I'm third here on the questioning, I'm going to be additive. I really appreciate the questions that have been asked to date. I think I'm going to be a little bit process oriented. So we have a series, and I'm not sure if this is a question for you, we have a series of recommendations of code changes. How will those come back before the commission on a specific timeline? Again, I feel like there's been recommendations over the last 2 years, and how do we make decisions? We may or may not accept, you know, some or all of them, but how will those come back? How will we have our the discussions that sort of tie it off so that we can move forward?
Yeah, thank you. And I will say, I think that we've had a chance now to, I think, hear specific. We did do some code changes updates in February, but I think that this is to get it in a really solid and good place. Having this report out from the Central CBAC on this is going to be helpful for us to really make sure that they are where we want them to be for the healthy functioning of all of the CBACs. What I would suggest is that we, you know, if there are feedback or thoughts on what's been proposed today, to work with Amada, to have each commissioner work with Amada and have your team work with Amada for those, and then we can bring them back for consideration, maybe in a board work session, and then schedule them for adoption at a certain point.
Yeah, I'd love to get it calendared just so we can work through them, so we don't go through another budget cycle. It seems like now's a great time to, again, sort of walk through them and decide, you know, which ones. I mean, I was thinking of what the general counsel says, you know, like, we want to be in compliance with the code. So for not, let's have a timeline to get in compliance.
Yeah, and I forgot to answer that part of your question, so apologies. I think what I was curious about is with Amada, like, thinking about that recruitment cycle and some of the things that are going to be implemented for fall, is that also a good time then to, like, make these code changes so that as that group is coming on, as that work is kicking off for the next budget cycle, we have everything locked in the code? That's my initial thought, but I want to have that conversation about the best timing. And do you have any thoughts on that?
A couple thoughts. One is, I think when we get the sort of CBAC bylaws or policy and procedures, I think that will be a really important companion to the code. I'd be really interested in putting them side by side and seeing what are the gaps that continue to persist. But I also think that much of the issues could be addressed in the bylaws, which wouldn't be necessarily code changes. I would say my thought would be, and I would take direction from you all, is to actually allow us to go through a budget cycle with the changes that we've made after we've looked at those two documents side by side, as a way to evaluate what additional changes would support the experience of community members, but also the efficiency of CBAC, and be able to evaluate the systems that we're introducing that have not existed before. So we have a set of participant management systems that we have not used from beginning to end. So I would say one recommendation would be to, at the end of next budget cycle, we actually evaluate both the bylaws and the code and hear from participants over that year and think about what code changes might come out of that.
So if we did that, would we potentially be going through another budget cycle where we're not in compliance with code, say minimum number of members?
Well, minimum.
That would be concerning for me.
Yeah.
So, like, is there a way to bifurcate? Like, hey, these are ones that we would need to do now, and these are other ones that we should sort of let the pot simmer and
yes.
see things marinate and see
yes.
how they work.
That makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So just from us, again, since this is like my third year in terms of the budget cycle and talking about the CBACs, it would be great to take the ones that we feel like we need to do so that we're in compliance at the minimum, and then have the other ones sort of marinate to see how they work or what other adjustments need to make. But I would hate to go through the another budget cycle with CBAC saying we're not in compliance or we don't have the right number of members. So that'd be one thing. Then sort of shifting gears, I'm going to go back to district representation, which is something that I raised during the last cycle. And again, this is a somewhat to Commissioner Singleton's point, is that not just the new members, but the totality of the membership, because I think there has been varying participation from different districts. So I'm curious, like, going forward, how are you going to capture that district representation? I appreciate you sent me, I think this morning or yesterday, some ways in which I can outreach into my district, but how are you going to capture that data and sort of make sure there's a host of different ways of representation we want to capture, but yes, how specifically on the district piece would you approach that?
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate that question. The new CBAC application has been aligned to the code. So all of the preferences and priorities for representation, including district now, will live in the application so that we will be able to print reports easily that says, what do we know about our CBAC members? And we can do that with all of those dimensions of diversity and representation accounted for. One of the recommendations from Central CBAC that unfortunately got blocked in the text was the recommendation that OCI actually begin in November, I think it was November, a report about the outreach work that we had done over the summer and what the outcome of that was. And I think that would be, I think it's a very important practice for our office, and we would present that to the board. So right at the beginning of the budget cycle, we have a sense of where we're at. So I think those are two, you know, ways to really institutionalize those practices and make them, you know, the way we do business.
Appreciate that. I'm curious, based on the recommendation to maybe not make code changes through this budget cycle, whether you all have any sort of reaction to that or thoughts about approach?
Yeah, I think definitely there's some of our recommendations that should happen more quickly because they don't really seek to improve the process. They just want to make it lawful. I would say that those code changes need to happen quicker than the ones around improving the actual outcomes or process, right? So I think specifically, you know, looking at changing that minimum requirement, making sure that the budget office isn't being asked to identify dates that they don't want to or weren't informed that they needed to, and additional kind of small bits around clarity. I would also add that board action around updating the status of the DCA, DCM, CBAC, and the Library Advisory Finance Subcommittee, that can happen probably a lot quicker, just to make sure that you have all your ducks in a row. I would say that if the idea is that we want to see the outcomes of these other processes, because we don't know if we should update code, then it probably makes sense to make sure that we are 100% compliant with the code we have. Because if we aren't compliant with the code we have, then we don't know whether that code is good, right? If we want to test whether the code we have is good, then we should follow it exactly. And then we'll be able to see outcomes about whether that code is good. If we're not following it, then we're testing a different set of procedures and policies than the Board of Commissioners has asked for. So that would be my recommendation, is to say, like, some of these need to happen immediately to ensure lawful compliance, because there's really some sketchy things going on. And then after that, look at some of these recommendations around improving processes and outcomes. Do you have anything to add?
I'm the DCA, DCM guy, so, I mean, it's kind of confusing for us when we're looking at it going, do we have to send one person or two, when we can hammer that out pretty easily. I mean, I love using the joke, my shoulders are big enough for two, so, I mean, I can joke about it, but I think in this case, if we can just make that fusion, you know, one tap of the gavel and it's done. Probably be easier for everyone involved, less confusion, and it'd be clear, which is one of the main things we're looking at.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting if there was like a Venn diagram of where that sort of agreement is of like, hey, these are things, these are essential things we should move ahead with, and these are other things that we agree that can wait another cycle. That would be helpful to me.
I would love to do that for you.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks for all the work you put in.
Yeah, great.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, co-chairs, TJ and Tabella. Thank you, Dr. Perez. I don't have any additional questions. You've made a lot of progress over the last 7 months and looking forward to the update come September and moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you. And I just really appreciate all of the work that's gone into this. And just the CBAC, Central CBAC, for focusing on this and helping to add to all the work that's being done, you know, to improve this process, to bring us in line with the code. I'm in favor of doing some things earlier, just so you know, I think there are certain things, like I am concerned about that minimum number of 7 and would hate for us to not be able to make that for some of the departments, CBACs, and then have that call into question, like if that's legitimate or not. So that's one of the things. And I think there were a couple others that were mentioned too. But Amada, I really appreciate the way that you have like really been leaning into this and really making sure that the experience for our CBAC members, the feedback and everything has been incorporated to build a really solid program. And I don't think we would be at this place if it wasn't for the work that you have done, Daniel, over the years on this, and everyone on the, you know, on the Central CBACs and the other CBAC members who have given their input. So I just really wanted to be appreciative of all of that. So thank you very much. Thank you. So that is our first board briefing for today. We have a second briefing this morning where we have some guests here from the city of Gresham for an informational briefing to the board on the Gresham Downtown Civic Urban Renewal Plan. I want to express my appreciation for Justin Douglas from the city of Gresham, who I know is here today, for his work on this item and for giving us the opportunity to learn more about the city's plans for renewal. I know this plan is of interest to my colleagues, and I'm looking forward to the discussion today. I also want to appreciate Mayor Stovall for coming over to our building and being here today for that. Before I turn things over to Justin, though, I wanted to make sure that Commissioner Jones Dixon has a time to welcome today's guests and kick us off.
Welcome. Now, looking forward to the presentation. Our team had an opportunity to read through the documents. And thank you again, Justin, for the briefing. And Elaine, it's always good to see you. And Mayor Stovall, welcome. Looking forward to the presentation. We'll hand it off to you.
Thank you, Chair Vega Peterson. I think the mayor will actually kick things off.
Great. Welcome. Good morning.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us this morning. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. I think this is only the third time that I've actually sat here, and that's a gross injustice to this great commission. So I got to come down here more often just to check in with you all and see all your amazing folks. As you've already referenced, we're here to talk about the potential of a downtown urban renewal, and I just get to kick it off and say a few words. First, I am Mayor Travis Stovall, just so you know who I am, and you really want to talk about kind of the excitement that we have around this urban renewal process. We're going to be launching, essentially, if it passes, the second urban renewal in the city of Gresham. And we have had great success in the Rockwood area with our urban renewal that was started many years ago, and it only has a few more years until it drops off. And if you've been to downtown Rockwood, you've seen quite the progress. But what most folks don't quite see is the progress that extends well beyond that. One of my favorite things to talk about is the infrastructure improvements down on 181st, which has prompted a lot of development along 181st and Sandy area. If you go down there, there's substantial infrastructure improvements in transportation and safety that have gone on over the years because of the urban renewal. But if we shift back to Rockwood Central, the incredible development that has gone on there, which in the future, we're still looking at additional development with B188, Rosemary Anderson High School, POIC, also has a project that's going on there. So what's the vision for this new area downtown and Civic? Really, it's about, again, extending the efforts that we've had in Rockwood and beyond. It's really looking at infrastructure, making sure that we provide opportunities for small business as they continue to grow, community revitalization. For many, many years, Gresham has not received the investments that we need to really prosper as a community, and we're now seeing the tide turning in those areas. And we really are excited about the opportunity of what exists here because of the success that we've seen in Rockwood, where $4 in private investments has happened for every dollar of public investment. So a 4-to-1 return on that investment is pretty tremendous. We want to see those same things happening in and around downtown. And of course, I would be remiss if I did not reference the excitement that surrounds the new Multnomah County Library that's going in. I can't wait till that opens. Super excited about that. And that's a cornerstone of where we are looking to develop the connection between civic neighborhood and downtown Gresham. And this urban renewal is a vital component of that. So again, I just want to thank you for having us down here to give you a preview of what we're looking at. And this is scheduled to go to the council later this year. So we'll be discussing this. But I know the council itself is very excited about this opportunity. And I will have to depart just a few minutes early, I'm sure, before this is all done. That is not that does not have anything to do with my sheer exuberance about what we're talking about here. Just have to get back out to Gresham for yet another meeting. So thank you again for having us.
Mayor, we really appreciate you taking the time to be here this morning, and we'll definitely rectify that only 3 appearances before this board.
Thank you, Mayor Stovall. You are an incredible ambassador for the city of Gresham, and I just so impressed with your enthusiasm and appreciate your leadership on this effort. So again, Chair Vega Peterson and members of the commission, thank you for the opportunity to present today. My name is Justin Douglas. I have the honor of serving as the director of the Gresham Redevelopment Commission, and I'm joined by Elaine Howard of Elaine Howard Consulting. So we're pleased to share with you today an update on the development of the proposed Gresham Downtown Civic Urban Renewal Plan. This is just an update. There's no action needed. As the mayor mentioned, this is a very exciting time for the city. It is the only second time that the city has considered creating a new urban renewal plan. I think it's important to note that over the past few years, Gresham voters have made their voices on urban renewal heard. In 2022, Gresham voters went to the ballot box to extend the Rockwood West Gresham plan expiration date from 2023 to 2029. And then in 2024, the voters again went to the ballot box to amend the city charter by removing a requirement that urban renewal plan adoption include a citywide vote. More recently, on May 20th of 2025, the Gresham Redevelopment Commission voted unanimously in favor of forwarding the draft Gresham Downtown Civic Urban Renewal Plan to Gresham City Council for adoption, which is currently anticipated to occur in early September. But before that vote, Oregon State statute requires staff to schedule a briefing with you, which brings us here to you today. So again, before we begin, just thanks again to the leadership of Mayor Stovall. City Manager Eric Schmidt, I believe, is on the call today. Wanted to appreciate his efforts in shepherding this effort forward over the last couple of years, including by convening an urban renewal task force whose feedback, advice, and wisdom was critical in getting us to where we are. I'll also note that we were pleased to have Multnomah County representation on the task force with staff from Commissioner Stegman's office. And then, of course, Commissioner Jones-Dixon, as a member of the Gresham City Council, your participation and guidance on the feasibility study for the plan. Next slide, please. So this plan that we're sharing with you today is the culmination of years of staff work and community engagement. One Gresham, which is graphically depicted on this slide, is a vision for a future of the city that strengthens and links its most important assets, historic downtown, the civic neighborhood, and Rockwood. That's kind of moving right to left. We envision a Gresham that will expand and attract businesses, create prosperity and jobs, and strengthen our community amenities. As the mayor mentioned, over the last 20 years, we have made investments in the Rockwood West Gresham urban renewal area, which has led to the completion of the multi-phased downtown Rockwood project. This includes the Market Hall, the Lumen Business Center. It also includes the Aviva Apartments, which have ground floor space that I understand the county is considering locating a women, infants, and children's facility on the ground floor, which we would be pleased to have in the neighborhood. We have also used urban renewal to invest in La Plaza Esperanza in partnership with Latino Network, the Rockwood Public Safety Building, MAX Station, and other transportation improvements, and then business incubator grants as well. So with this new proposed plan, the city will have resources to complete the One Gresham vision, linking these three important centers in the heart of our city. Next slide, please. So for context, this map shows the location of the proposed plan, that yellow polygon on the right, which is entirely located within Multnomah County District 4. You'll also note that the plan is approximately 1 mile to the east of the Multnomah County-owned Vance Park. On the next slide, if we zoom in for a moment, you will see that the approximately You'll see that the approximately 900-acre plan is roughly bounded by Burnside to the north, Hogan and Highway 26 to the east, Powell to the south, and Wallula to the west. The historic downtown is kind of the finer-grained street grid in the center of this image, and this civic neighborhood is more towards the upper left and includes some larger properties, including City Hall, the Gresham Barlow School District site, as well as Kmart sites and the Kmart site and other shopping centers. On the next slide, we have included a zoning map just to show that the proposed boundary, it essentially overlays with the commercial and mixed use zoning in the downtown Gresham and excludes some of the residential and single family zones. So with that, I will turn it over to Elaine. She's going to touch on the kind of the vision of the plan and some of the planned investments, resource generation, and fiscal impacts to taxing districts.
Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning.
Thank you. I helped facilitate the task group that worked on developing the urban renewal plan. The task group developed the plan vision and goals and vetted the projects and financial resources for the plan. The vision and goals, the vision is to create a vibrant, inclusive, and resilient community where everyone can share in economic prosperity, enjoy connection and belonging, and live a high quality life. There are sub-goals beneath that vision for authentic engagement, placemaking and community identity, housing, business and community vitality, transportation and infrastructure. Next slide. Pairing with those goals were project categories. These project categories are identified here under private development leverage. Community identity, transportation, utilities, debt administration, issuance costs for borrowing, and reserves. You can see that in 2025 dollars, so in today's dollars, the amount of money to allocate to projects within this urban renewal area is $211 million. The actual maximum indebtedness of the area is $381 million. That $381 million is that cost of that money over time, over that 30 years, and it includes both projects, programs, and administration. So you can see how, when we bring that back, discount that back to today's dollars, how it breaks almost in half the amount of money that you actually have when you say, I'm going to allocate this amount of money to this project category. So in today's dollars for private development leverage, there are $53 million to allocate. which over the life of the plan will end up costing about $103 million, as that money's not available now, it's available over time. That is 27% of the overall funding projected for the area. For community identity, we have allocated 25% of the total funding, transportation 14%, utilities 12%, debt administration, issuance, and reserve 23%, to equal the full funding amount of the $381 million. Next slide. As we all know, the impacts of urban renewal is not on individual property taxpayers. It is on the other taxing districts, which levy taxes within that area. For the general government category, those taxing districts are Multnomah County. Their contribution to the urban renewal plan would be about $127 million. Again, that's over that 30-year time frame. The Port of Portland, $2 million. East Multnomah Soil and Water, $3 million. Metro, $3 million. The City of Gresham itself, $106 million. And then the Multnomah County Library, $36 million. So the subtotal of the general government contributions to the urban renewal area are $277 million. Next slide. The Gresham-Bartle School District and Multnomah Education Service District are what we call indirectly impacted by urban renewal because they are funded through the state school fund on a per pupil basis. The state school fund has a lot of different funds that channel into that big state school fund. Any urban renewal within the state of Oregon impacts money going into the state school fund. However, the legislature can backfill those funds with funding sources, other funding sources, to meet their per pupil targets. Their estimated impact, so it's not directly to the school district, but on that state school fund, is $133 million that would have been through the school district, and for the Education Service District, $13 million. Mount Hood Community College, $14 million. The community colleges are also funded on a statewide funding source, so that also is not a direct impact on the community colleges. So the subtotal of education is $161 million, and you can see the total taxing district impacts is $437 million. The reason that is higher than the estimated maximum indebtedness of $381 million is any interest on debt is not considered part of maximum indebtedness, but you still have to pay that interest on debt that comes from the different taxing districts. It is figured into these impact numbers. So that overall estimated total taxing district impact is $437 million. Next slide. We had talked about the Rockwood District, which is getting ready to close. The Rockwood District is represented here by, it's like a bluish gray color. And those are the funds that will be coming back to Multnomah County as a result of the Rockwood District closing. You can see in fiscal year 26-27, that amount is about $500,000. That is because that is the last year of the urban renewal area. They still need to collect some tax increment revenues to meet their maximum indebtedness, but they don't need all of their tax increment revenues. So some of those will be returned to the impacted taxing districts. In fiscal year 27-28 is when the district fully closes, and over $2 million will be coming back to Multnomah County. The orange represents the impacts from the Civic Downtown urban renewal area, and you can see that those impacts are outweighed by the positive impact to your budget, at least through 35-36, of those monies coming in from the successful Rockwood District, and then the monies that will be contributed to the downtown Civic District. Next slide. Next slide, please. Thank you. This is the proposed schedule. The Gresham Redevelopment Commission meeting was on May 20th. We sent out information to all of the overlapping taxing districts on May 30th. You are given, by statute, a 45-day consult and confer time period. Any written recommendation, which is received by the Gresham City Council during that time frame, will be considered by the City Council as they are considering the potential adoption of the plan. So if you have recommendations that you want to make, those should be written recommendations addressed to the Gresham City Council. You have until July 10th is when that 45-day time period officially expires. We have our briefing today. The Planning Commission will review the proposed plan on July 14th to make a recommendation on its conformance to the comprehensive plan. The Gresham public hearing will not be August 19th. We needed to change that date, and it got changed after we sent this through, so I'm sorry for that change, but it will be August 26th at the Gresham City Council hearing chambers. And then because it is a non-emergency ordinance, the City Council will have a second reading on September 2nd and the final vote on the ordinance at that meeting. Next slide. So we're happy to answer any questions that you may have on the proposed plan. I have the full plan and report here with me. If you want to go into any details on any of that, I'd be happy to do that. And of course, both Justin and the mayor.
Thank you so much, Elaine. Appreciate that. So I'm sure we'll have some questions or conversation. I will turn it over to Commissioner Jones Dixon to start us off.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And we plan to send over just a letter on by Thursday, by the 10th, as far as recommendations or just feedback regarding the initial plan. I'll just put on the, just for the record, I think there should be a focus on food systems when we're thinking about businesses, so that'll be in the recommendation. And then I just met the folks from Upriver, which is a newer nonprofit. So just thinking about how the developments are impacting our the 55 plus communities, and then also the anti-displacement strategy as well. So a lot of that will be in the letter. It was great to read through this and see a lot of the things that we've been discussing, Mayor, you know, with our strategic plan, woven into just the initial plan. I live in this district, so I look forward to I look forward to the work moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Brim Edwards.
I don't have any questions, but I want to say first, welcome, and we hope you come more often. It's great sitting next to Commissioner Jones Dixon, because always when I'm talking about the city, it's like the cities. I just feel that pressure, presence coming in. So I appreciate you coming. Appreciate you all sharing this. I guess one question I'd have is just like the impacts on the other jurisdictions. Are they supportive? I'm assuming they're not approving. But sort of like, how does that play out with the other jurisdictions?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner. I can say that over the course of the 45, well, I guess we're probably on day 43 at the moment, we haven't heard from a single taxing district yet. So they have a couple more days, and obviously we'd be happy to meet with them even later, but we have not heard any concerns to date.
Great. And then just a comment, I love hearing that the library is going to be sort of is being thought of as like an anchor and a sort of central piece of the economic prosperity and just the community life. So it's great to hear, and we can't wait for it to open.
Thank you. Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you. Want to echo the appreciation. Good to see you, Mayor. Mayor Stovall knows I'm a bit of a housing wonk, so I do have a couple of questions. I saw the calculations that you had, and I couldn't quite place where housing was in those percentages. Is that in the private development percentage? Okay. Is there a specific dollar amount or goal that you all have around the housing development piece? And I know it's homeownership and potentially multifamily, so there's a couple of options that I saw in there.
Ask other questions.
Okay, sounds good. I I just wanted to, I think we all well know the history of urban renewal and the racist history that it has. And I know there's been a ton of work by every jurisdiction to kind of solve for that and attempt to not replicate any of those mistakes that were made in the past. And I really appreciate seeing how you're addressing community engagement and really looking at the full spectrum. How are we thinking about, again, not just rental, but home ownership opportunities and making sure it's a place for folks of mixed income levels. I am interested to understand some of what your plans are to solve for anti-displacement and anti-gentrification work, which I think we still continue to struggle with in our TIF districts that we see in the city of Portland as well.
I'll just start with a couple of overview comments. I think this city council and historically city councils, especially when Councilor Jones-Dixon was on the council, this is a cornerstone of what we do. When we look at the Rockwood West Gresham urban renewal, we worked with Boys and Girls Club, La Peraza, Esplanade, where they, I mean, and we also working with POIC and Rosemary Anderson High School. And that's the efforts that really, it really takes an intentional effort to ensure that we're not doing the displacement. Housing is a bit trickier. I mean, we looked at housing, in ownership housing in the Rockwood West Gresham urban renewal area, and it's challenging to do the infill to make housing affordable, as you know. And so that's a challenging piece that we haven't quite solved for yet, but we do have, you know, we do have our affordable, highly affordable, deeply affordable units that are adjacent to downtown Rockwood. Furthermore, what we did with microenterprise within the downtown core of Rockwood and West Gresham, you know, to me is super exciting to have the opportunity to go into the Rockwood Market Hall to decrease your cost of capital, to go in as small businesses and go from garages to storefronts and have those possibilities and opportunities is a rung that gets put right back into the ladder of the poverty to prosperity journey. And so those are the types of things that we live by example. Those are the types of things we did in West Gresham and Rockwood area that we're going to also bring into what we're doing here so that we're looking at non-gentrification, non-displacement avenues. And we're not giving up on the affordable housing component. You know, we've actually investigated and looked at, you know, some of these clusters, some of the cottage cluster solutions, and a bunch of different other things that we're currently looking at to bring back that affordable housing into the cores where we can actually look at lowering the displacement situation that we see. And this mechanism actually gives us a much higher control and to be able to do the things that we're doing. So really, I'm excited as the mayor, person of color. I'm excited about what we were able to accomplish in Rockwood and West Gresham, and excited about what the future looks like and what we can do in Civic and downtown Gresham.
Awesome. Thank you.
And with that, actually, I apologize, but I do have to depart.
That's a good mic drop. I
Again, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I greatly appreciate the partnership that we have with Multnomah County. It, you know, it produces a lot of great outcomes that here in the city of Gresham. We're just super appreciative of what we have in working with the county. So thank you for all that you do.
Thank you, Mayor.
You're in good hands.
Yes.
And I do have an answer. We talked about housing a lot in our subcommittee, our task group. We did not allocate specifically to those. When you look at the report, we allocated by those general categories. So housing is folded within that general category. We did have goals for housing, but we didn't identify specific number of units. But the goals are to facilitate development of ownership types, rehabilitate existing housing, ensure development of a diverse type of housing, and participate in public-private investments.
Awesome. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I think it will go far to connect this to some of the work that you all will be doing over time there with the regional housing production strategy and making sure that there's links and potential leverage opportunities for some of that work. And that's the other thing I just wanted to highlight is I see a ton of potential leverage opportunities in your plan. I really love seeing reference to transit-oriented development. And I really like how Metro and TriMet have been thinking about transit-oriented development and not just housing, but in a what is a community need and how do we think about that differently. So I'm a big fan of a leverage opportunity. So I see a lot of that in here and just appreciate the work that's been done to really call those pieces out and get to the point that you're at today. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Moyer.
Thank you. I have mixed feelings about urban development, primarily for the reasons that Commissioner Singleton pointed out. And I do appreciate the thoughtfulness around some of the pitfalls and consequences of previous urban renewal. One of my hopes for any time we are foregoing a significant amount of revenue, I consider that equivalent to spending that revenue on that purpose, is that it be of benefit primarily to the community in which we are trying to inject some life and energy and funding into. And so, I just hope, coming from a family of developers, I'm fairly familiar with some of these mechanisms and wanting, and I think this is just a level deeper than you guys got into, but how do we make sure that the benefits of this can go to community members as much as possible and not necessarily seek to lure entities who do not have a commitment to the community? That does not mean we would not love to see some businesses join Gresham, and I think that's great, but I think it's that commitment and that shared vision that I hope can be at the center of this. And again, I share Commissioner Singleton's hope that this be a benefit to the residents and not displace people. And with that, I wish this project the best.
Thank you so much. And again, I just really appreciate this. Justin, I was thinking of when we first met, and I think it was during the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative work on the Mid-County one, I think it was. So it's been, over 10 years for sure. It's great to see you continue working on economic development and projects like this one. Elaine, thank you for all your work leading this effort to come up with this plan. I will say, similar to the comments here, we really, I think, knowing that how this kind of investment in downtown areas and other areas can really help the vibrancy of a community, but also learning from past mistakes that I think have been done with urban renewal areas where we have seen folks pushed out or we have not seen the type of development that really benefits the entire community. It feels like a lot of those learnings have been done with the things that were being forward. These things are always have the impact. So I appreciate, the table that shows for the different taxing districts, like what the impact was. We also, similarly, Portland just did 6 new TIF districts for that, and that also has that. So cumulatively, we see those impacts in terms of for the next, 20, 30 years for Multnomah County, as well as, our neighboring tax districts. And that does have an input, but I think that although we don't have a vote or approval on these things, we have been supportive of these in the past as a board because we understand that this is something that has a net positive for all of us, including, Multnomah County as a government, but most especially for the people within Multnomah County. But that's always the balance. So just appreciate you coming today to really walk us through both those impacts, but also the plans and the potential benefits for all of us. So thank you very much. Good luck with the next steps. And again, really appreciate your time today. Thank you. So that concludes today's meeting. The county will conduct a proclamation signing ceremony tomorrow, Wednesday, July 9th. My son and my dad's birthday, by the way. And Commissioner Moyer's son. I know, it's a great day. And that will be from noon to 1 p.m. in this boardroom. A quorum of Multnomah County Board of Commissioners will attend, and we hope that you will consider attending as well or turning in virtually. There being no further business, we are adjourned.